Welcome to Made for Music, brought to you by Stitch Records. I am your host, Duncan Byerjean. This podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is, and sign up for our newsletter at madeformusicpodcast.com to be the first to hear about all the new content, alumni news, and insights into the ever-evolving music business. As I mentioned before, the podcast is brought to you by Stitch Records. Many of you may know Cross Stitch, a.k.a. Aaron Karstensen. He has produced and mixed every song I've released as D.B. Stewart. He has a background in sound design from Berklee College of Music, and there's truly no one else I trust more to deliver the best sounding mixes than him. And the fastest way to get a hold of him is on Instagram at xstitchmusic, where he also has a lot of short form production and mixing tutorials and a link tree in his bio that points to all his long form courses. We have an incredible guest today. So without further ado, here's the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast may have the most comprehensive perspective on what it takes to pull off a live show and tour. Graduating from Emerson with a background in TV and video production, she moved to LA for an internship. In differentiating herself with a broad musical background, including creative arts programs and bands of her own, she quickly found herself on the road with Big Voodoo Daddy. Since then, all she's done is continue to level up. When I say she knows it all and has done it all. From the 10,000-foot view, doing tour production management and coordination for the likes of Khalid, Plain White Tees, and Fits in the Tantrums, to the technical wizardry she pulls off as a guitar tech, drum tech, and stage manager for Vance Joy, Lindsey Stirling, Tegan and Sarah, and so many more. So without further ado, please welcome off the heels of Vance Joy's In Our Own Sweet Time tour of the UK, the woman ensuring all your favorite band's tours are going off without a hitch, Mary Broadbent.
Thank you. Thank you for the lovely introduction.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you here and appreciate you taking the time, especially after switching hemispheres. I guess before we dive into the early days, how is the transition back going? You've done a tour in the UK, obviously, and now stateside. What does that look like for you? How do you decompress after a run like that?
You know what I actually tried for the first time ever was staying back after the tour ended in London a few days. I had some family I wanted to see. So that was actually really nice and a good decompression from the tour, because we had been first getting over there. And since we were there for such a short time, we had to get on the time zone difference. So we, you know, jet lag was a real thing. And then it was just nice to kind of like sit and relax and just get some good sleep in without like the possible need of having to be available for anyone and anything that might happen on the tour that would like derail that on a day off or something. So that was really nice to just hang back. And that's kind of what I feel is like a good method for a lot of people. If you can afford to do that, it's just like hang back and on your own dime, just stay at a hotel, you know, in the same place you were or nearby, or, you know, just like relax a little bit and then travel home a few days later, especially if it's like abroad, you kind of want to take those opportunities to go check out the sites if your schedule's a little tight and you're not able to while the tour is in motion.
Totally. I think that's one thing that gets lost on so many folks is the tour machine is such a like, what, 12, 14 hour day sort of thing that you hit all these cities and don't actually get to experience them.
Yeah, that is kind of the rub that makes it a little, just, I don't know, I guess it's like dangling a carrot in front of you of like, oh, you're here in this amazing place, but all you do is you see the venue, you do the show, and then it's nightfall and then you leave. So you really don't have that much time to go out and see sights and do stuff unless you make time for it, so.
Totally. Have you had, I guess, cities that you've toured to that are on your bucket list to actually go experience now that you've, you know, pass through and you're like, oh, this would be super cool to spend time, but obviously it's not much time in the day.
I'd love to go back and spend more time in, say, Paris or, I mean, I just always love the major cities. Like, I can never get enough of going through someplace like New Orleans or New York. Or oddly enough, I've never actually really gone through and spent a lot of time in Nashville, which so that would be a city to actually, you know, experience and explore more as well. Or someplace like Portland, Maine. That's another good one.
It's funny. I see that one on a lot of tours and I always get jealous because I feel like lately I've been seeing Seattle. I'm up in Seattle. And I see them get passed on a lot. I'm like, wait a second. They're in the top corner. I know whole East Coast a lot easier to travel and whatnot for tours and such, but always been like, dang, they're getting the shows and we aren't, but I've heard it's a beautiful place.
Oh, it was Seattle, you mean, or where are you?
I'm based in Seattle, but I see a lot of tours that do like a lot of my favorite bands go to Portland, Maine. And so it's one of those when they're skipping Seattle, I'm always like, oh, come on, we're just as like far north. But I know it's much easier to get to Portland, Maine if you're doing like East Coast runs than it is to do the West Coast where everything's spread out.
Yeah. I always I find it interesting when we'll skip something like Portland, Oregon, or even Seattle and go straight up to Vancouver or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, like not go to Canada. I'd really appreciate that. For me, the Canada is always stressful just because of the border crossing. So it's not particularly my favorite place to go, but this last tour I was on, we were in Canada for, like a month. So I grew appreciation because we got to go to a lot of different cities and not just like Montreal or Quebec or Vancouver. So that made me grow an appreciation for it. So I like it okay now, but not as tour manager still.
One of the funniest stories we had on here is J.R. Robinson was the bus driver for Justin Bieber, and he talked about how he had a parasailing incident or a paragliding incident where he accidentally went over the border and the chaos that caused for the tour because he was New York side and accidentally flew over. He got blown over the border and of course got stopped very quickly by law enforcement. But yeah, it was a whole nightmare to try and, you know, someone flies over the border and all of a sudden say, no, you don't understand. I'm with like Kevin Hart or I'm with Justin Bieber. Doesn't exactly seem like a great excuse for folks when they think you're trying to skip the crossing.
Oh yeah, no, that sounds horrifying. That always have your passport no matter what. But yeah, probably the last place you'd expect to fly across the border accidentally.
Right.
We had an instance on one of my last tours where we were crossing the border and we had double drivers, which sometimes you need when the drives are really long. So there was, I think, 8 of us in the bus and then 2 double drivers. So that made like 10 people total. But the new driver didn't know exactly how many people were in the bus. So he quoted the border patrol 9 people. And then somebody in the group was like, no, there's actually 10 because there's like 2 drivers and then there's 8 people. Then they checked all our passports. And basically at the end of the day, we were short giving them one passport. And that same person who forgot to give their passport to the tour manager the night before also just happened to be hanging out in the back and was just really not coming forward to be like, oh, I'm here. So we snuck somebody back over the border, but they were American anyway. But it was just kind of like, oh dear. Like, and they were really nice at the border crossing too, out of Canada. And it was like one of those nice border patrol spots where it's like mountains and hills around it. So it wasn't, I don't know. It could have been bad, but luckily it wasn't.
Yeah, glad to hear, glad to hear it went smooth. You started, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but my understanding is you actually started more on the kind of management side of things before moving to the tech side. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, that's correct. I started, as you mentioned, with Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, just doing merchandise and driving their truck with their gear. And I had this really great mentor named Brian Stanley, who is still their tour manager. And I think just sort of seeing how he would handle the days and pass out the information and just kind of was this leader for his whole team that really was inspiring for me to see. And that kind of was what really made me lean towards wanting to learn to be a tour manager. So that's what I focused on a lot more so when I first started out. And so I do any kind of TM gig I could. And then I came to this point where I would only get accepted or considered for gigs if I could do tour management and something else. And that's a common thing that happens with a lot of jobs at some levels of touring, where it's, you have to be TM front of house, you have to be TM monitor engineer, you have to, you know, there was always this pairing of like audio or lighting with like the tour manager position, which nobody ever enjoys, by the way. It's not like
right
a fun thing anybody to do is two jobs. But I thought like, well, I need to like bulk up and like, you know, have something else to offer. So then I started to learn stage management and guitar teching and backline teching at like basically almost 10 years later with Voodoo Daddy as well. And then that's when I got more opportunities, guitar teching and stage managing. And that's how that rolled forward.
Very cool. And did it help to have a background then as a musician yourself? I know you were in like bands growing up, and then did that help to have a background in obviously knowing what it takes to perform then, or what did that look like as far as that evolution was concerned?
I think because I was in bands growing up, that passion was there to like put on a show and do something that was like both creative and homegrown. So I really loved going into the touring side of things as sort of just like this amenity to help bands like get to their next level and do what they wanted to do and be that support system they needed and be that person who like cared about them. Cause you know, a lot of people go into it as creatives and they already have themselves beating themselves down saying like, you can't do this. Why am I doing this? I feel so stupid doing this. So I feel like it's always good to have somebody, you know, there to help inspire you and help you get to the next level. And I mean, I know that sometimes you're not even thinking about that when you're doing the whole thing as like somebody that's, an artist. But you know, when you look back or like in certain moments, you're definitely happy you have those people there to help you out with little things or big things, or just put the show on the way you want it to get whatever kind of like message or like creative, like, I don't know, like perspective across that you're trying to achieve for your fans so they can understand you better as a person. So
that's so lovely. I guess, did you have like, before all of this began, like when you were growing up, did you have shows that made you want to be, or did you, I guess you have artists or tours you saw that like inspired you in a way creatively that resonate to this day?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been a huge fan of, the band No Doubt. And I think what I liked the most about them was they were just like a bunch of kids that were like friends, and some of them were like family related. And they just made music in their house, you know, and, they just kept on like going and doing shows and like would drive all over California and Arizona and Nevada or whatever, anywhere to just do shows. And they just always seemed like they had such a like close, like strong, I don't know, drive to just like have fun and put on good shows and make good music and do something fun and creative and just always like work together as a team. So I don't know, just their whole vibe always like attracted me to like wanting to have something like that for myself, like be part of a team that like both like achieved like a great goal and had fun and like always just like this strong message of just like working together and like making good music. So
awesome. So I take it at that point you had a chance to like see them live, or I guess how many, if you don't mind me asking, how many times did you have the chance to see them?
I mean, I don't know. I've probably seen them maybe about maybe 10 or so times live. I was able, they, I was still in like high school when they were like starting to get huge in like 95, 96. I couldn't really go out and see them many places. I don't know. I was in high school, but I you know, and then they just stopped touring. So yeah, the chances weren't as many as I'd like to have had with them. But yeah, I've seen them live a couple times. I went to a Halloween party at Gwen's brother's house one year, and I got to meet Gwen for a minute before she probably like ran away with her friends, like because she was like hanging out with her friends. She didn't want to like be like Gwen Stefani from No Doubt at that point. I've seen them a couple times, and yeah, I still enjoy their music. So
very cool. I guess from those shows, you talked about kind of the message that's being delivered and building around that. You go get a degree in like video TV and like video production. How do you feel that influenced your approach to tour and production management, if at all?
Wow, let me see. That's a good question. I feel like as far as just advancing like the kind of like just kind of having an idea of the kind of tour I wanted to have, or just what I wanted to provide for the artist, and then just kind of walking through it, like almost sort of like you walk through editing something frame by frame to get what you want out of it. It's sort of like you're walking through advancing and setting up the tour step by step. You know, you're like, okay, like we all have to like, I have to do all this planning ahead of time, which means like booking hotels, like touching base with the venues, getting transportation together. If there's going to be rehearsals ahead of the tour, booking the rehearsal space, and then making sure we have like all the equipment we need for the tour, whether that's like the band's personal equipment, including like the drums, the bass, the guitar, all the backline, or if we're renting that, I have to, you know, do all that advancing. And then sort of like going back to the whole like section by section, just thinking of the beginning of the tour and how that's going to start and what things I'm going to need to build that tour up, as far as just like flights to say Los Angeles, hotels, booking like through like a whole week in LA, booking at say center staging, you know, like transportation to and from the hotel to center staging, that kind of thing. Like, and then just like other things that like are specific to what the artist wants or needs, or what their maybe hired band might want or need to help them put on and, you know, rehearse the show before it goes on the road. So I guess that's kind of it, just more like the advancing, just like figuring out what you want and then just making it come to life the best that you can, of course, because once you're on the road, things kind of just go up in the air and it's like, all right, let's just hope for the best.
Do you have like an optimal lead time for prep for that kind of stuff? Obviously it's a ton to orchestrate, and I guess particularly on the stage show side of things, you know, you hear about some artists like, oh, we only rehearsed for a week or something like that leading up to tour. Like from your perspective as both a your time in tour and production management as well as a tech, is there like a, hey, it would be great to have at least X amount of time to run this before we take it on the road?
It just depends, I think, on how comfortable the band feels with like, have they gotten themselves together enough where they, you know, they're either like, if they're putting on a new record, they probably need more time to rehearse that and get like, if there's samples or playback or anything like that, that takes time to get together. So that could be anywhere like for maybe a month or so of rehearsals or more, depending on like the scale of the artist. To it, maybe if you're just doing a reunion tour, you might just you know, rehearse everything for a week. But it also, it just depends on the finances too, because if the band doesn't have the right finances to have a full production rehearsal with the crew, then they're just relying on themselves to just rehearse everything before everybody meets up and goes out, which I personally don't feel like if you have like a crew with you, you should probably, you know, lasso them in to be there presently during that week you're rehearsing, because they also have to go over production needs and wants. But if the budget's not there for that, that can be tricky too, to meet both those things.
So I'm really curious as to when you made your foray into tour and production management. You mentioned you had a mentor that was, if I heard you correctly, that kind of led into that first role. You move out to LA for an internship. And I guess, what does that transition period look like? And I guess, how did you go about procuring that A, mentorship, and B, role in the tour as well?
So I went out to LA through the Emerson.
The Zoom audio cut out here. Mary says she went to LA through an Emerson to LA internship program.
While I was at called the Oil Factory, I met a woman there named Justine Smith, who I can't remember her exact title, but she was in charge in some capacity of, you know, the music videos there. And she actually was the one who suggested to me one day that I should look into working on tour with bands. She put my name up to go out with Christina Aguilera and submitted my resume for it. And I didn't get the gig, but it really got me thinking. So it was pretty much immediate that I was already thinking about turning into going on the road and pursuing that kind of a career before I even finished my TV video production degree. Although, I mean, I finished it and graduated school. So I was in LA for a while after that, and then did some PA work here and there. And then I just kind of, I didn't have any connections of any kind, and my internships were all very film and TV related. So I really just kind of looked on Craigslist back then, and, you know, any kind of music assistant, tour assistant, anything like that. And through a lot of like searching and, you know, weekend gigs and things like that, I built up my resume to be more of like a tech, like stage tech, tour tech person. Then this ad for Voodoo Daddy came on Craigslist and I applied for it. And that was kind of my lucky break, where I just went over and met Brian at Third Encore. And, you know, he told me about the gig, and I told him I was interested, and they said, okay, we'll like try you out. And then they kept me.
That sounds nerve-wracking. When you say like try you out, is it literally like, okay, we're going to start playing and we're going to throw these different scenarios at you, and you just got to kind of roll with whatever?
Well, that was okay. So my sort of audition for being their new merch / truck driver person was, I think I just drove down to San Diego where they had an outdoor show, and I met up with their old merch person, and he just walked me through what the job was. And then we just did the job together, you know, and then I was just there selling while he, I guess, got to hang out with the band backstage or something. I don't know what he was doing, or maybe he was there. I can't remember. I don't think he was, but maybe he was. But yeah, then after the gig was done, you know, everything was fine as far as like the money was all straight. There wasn't like any $5 missing, $10 missing. Like I counted everything correctly. And he said, okay, cool. You did a good job, you know? And then I guess after that, they just like maybe tried out somebody else, and they just liked me better. And yeah, that was about it.
So cool that you've transformed kind of your career based on that moment, what I'm curious about is that tour ends. What does that next step look like? Because it is so kind of gig oriented of whether there's a tour running. How did you use that as a launch pad? And what did it look like, I guess, procuring additional gigs from there?
Right. That was a little tricky. As soon as I kind of outgrew being the merch, to back up, Voodoo Daddy, they're a band that they tour pretty much all year round, but they're not consistent. Like, they're not like gone for 2 months at a time or 3 months at a time. They're like mainly weekend warriors with a couple like weeks where they actually go on tour. And that was how it was when I was with them. But eventually I outgrew my position with them. So I wanted to try and do something else. And I'd already at that point gotten a smaller gig for like a month in Europe with Foggy Molly selling merch. So that also kind of, you know, piqued my interest, like, oh, I want to go out with the different bands and go to different places and stuff like that. Once I left Voodoo Daddy, I did like a small, I again went to Craigslist and I was looking for more gigs, and I did like a week and a half long gig with a band from France, and that was mainly fly dates. And we did South by, Austin, yeah, LA, New York, all those places. And then again, it was just like kind of scrapping for gigs because Facebook still wasn't around then. And I didn't really have tons of touring people that I knew that I could ask for jobs, and any job that I was looking for at that point, I wanted to go on and do tour management. And I think I was still just very much seen as like a merch person. To bulk up on the TMing things, I actually did marketing tours for a few summers just to like, one, pay my bills, but also again, like get a little bit more familiar with like crew management and, you know, exercise more about like doing advancing by myself on a smaller scale, like, but the same process of like, okay, we're going to be here. We need to book hotels there. We need to get like, we need to plan out our day and have this much time. So we need to have a lobby call at this time. And I very much took, Brian's, you know, own teachings of how he structured his days and how he planned out days and applied that to those tours that I was basically learning to be a better tour management and getting the sort of fundamentals down front with.
You are doing those tours and then you transition back over into the tour management side. And obviously, you know music very well and you were involved in that ecosystem. Stepping back into that, and I guess almost switching lenses here, that's so much to juggle. And then I guess on the artist side, like as like kind of the counterpart that you're working with, how can artists best support their crew?
I think one thing that is makes the tour manager successful is probably not only the artist, but the crew that they have with them that helps them succeed. I think if you have a crew that's probably, you know, just maybe doesn't see the bigger picture and they're just maybe thinking personally about themselves all the time, and they don't really see where you're coming from, that can be a struggle and disheartening, because then everybody looks selfish on the like I look selfish, they look selfish, everybody's not really communicating. I mean, communication is probably one of the key things you need to have on the tour. But also, I think from a tour manager perspective, you probably just also need to not be afraid of making people upset with you and disappointing people. But it can also come as well, because when you're a tour manager or a production manager, you're in charge of your team, and you're not always going to have the answer that everybody wants to hear, or handle things the way that the team would rather you handle them. So I guess it's just like respect and support and communication are really important within a team and for a tour manager to succeed. And also with the artists doing that too, like if an artist is telling you one thing and then they decide that they're going to act a different way, that's a little disappointing, because that doesn't show very much merit or respect, or have you as a tour manager and an employee really want to work with that artist again, or, you know, be anywhere involved with that artist again.
It's a tricky line to walk, because like you mentioned, ultimately the responsibility is to keep the tour moving and rolling. And then, yeah, if there's lack of communication or something like that, can all just break down pretty quick, I assume. Do you have like tools that you prefer? Do you have like project management tools or mechanisms you use to keep things on track? Because especially I assume if you're doing like world tours, crossing time zones, all that stuff, it's a lot of pieces to juggle.
Well, as far as like tech tools go, like the main one that a lot of people use is MasterTour. It's a great application, and it kind of basically is sort of your checklist of what you need to take care of in order to get a tour going, and what you need to fulfill before the tour starts. And it's also just sort of like the information database for everybody in the crew and management and any of the artists to look onto. It's an app on your phone for them to see what the schedule is going to be that day, for them to know what's going to be happening in the next week. It's extremely helpful, and it basically like helps with everybody as far as like the littlest things, like knowing which seat you are on a plane, to like having the ability to submit guest lists, guest list name for a show like 2 months from now, you know. So that's probably the top one. And probably the main one a lot of people use these days. As far as other things, like obviously having your computer and your phone and any other thing like a printer or that stuff's always good to have on tour to help you out.
I actually hadn't been familiar with MasterTour, so that's exciting to be able to highlight.
Oh, yeah. From, I think the company's name is Eventric and the application is called Master Tour. That's probably the correct way to plug that. But they're also the Eventric folks at with Master Tour. They're also really good at helping you out, being there to communicate with any problems you need. They're very hands-on with making sure that like you can to help you guide through a Master Tour if you need that, because sometimes it can be a little bit overwhelming with like all the updates, or like because sometimes things will be a lot different than they once were. But the people over there at Master Tour are really nice too.
That's so important from like a software company, especially if you're in the middle of something and all of a sudden an update gets pushed and you're trying to coordinate a million different pieces at once. I can't imagine how disruptive that could be. On the road then, obviously it's a lot of juggling as you go. I guess a lot of this is going to be a per tour basis, or it depends. When you're on the road, say, I guess if we take like this Vance Joy tour, for example, how long in advance are you having to orchestrate all of this stuff? I guess from just initial discussions through actually diving into Master Tour and orchestrating these things out, even for like a week long run.
As you mentioned, every tour is different. with Vance Joy, they have been going pretty long and hard since the pandemic sort of subsided, because they were, I think, before the right when the pandemic ended, that's when Vance put out the In Our Own Sweet Time record. So in, I think, 2021, they immediately began touring that in 2022. So this is just sort of the tail end of it, that I was asked to come on because their normal guitar tech, who's a very dear friend of mine, she got another job opportunity. So when I was hired immediately, they just wanted to book out the rest of the flights for me for the year. And that was through the management actually, and not through the tour manager, but they wanted to do that immediately just to like, you know, because planes flights are expensive. And I think they already had carved out like a block number of hotel rooms and things like that for the rest of the tour runs that they had. So that was already done. It was more about just putting the person's name on the room. Don't know exactly how far out that particular tour probably does their advancing, but I would guess maybe anywhere as early as like 3 months before they start going on tour, they start working on it. But they were also working on multiple legs and just getting those all done.
What does that look like for you then? So that's interesting. Of course, stepping into a crew that has existed, or a lot of the team that may already know one another from a longstanding tour, what was that experience like for you kind of stepping in? Of course, you don't have to like do all the tour production and management stuff, but you're stepping into a kind of a new ecosystem for this run.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely been there before where I'm the quote unquote new kid on the tour run. I actually had to do that as a production manager too for Mitski last year. But this one was a little different because it was just me and nobody else was new at that point. I'd say it was just, you know, it's just tricky. You want to see how it goes. You don't want to cause any waves, but make sure you're doing your job correctly. And you're kind of learning as you go with any possible like mistakes or errors or hiccups that might occur that you're not familiar with or aware of, because you're just learning the equipment. Then you're learning if it's new, if it's finicky, if it's old, if it's temperamental. So there's all these like little things that, you know, are possibly triggers for people or equipment. Then you just want to be very graceful and not step on any toes, if you can. So, in general, I just usually try and go in there and do my job and like, just, you know, be as friendly as I can be, but also kind of be aware of like, you know, if some people just are more comfortable with like getting to like see your work ethic first before trying to be friendly with you, there's that too. But yeah, so it's just basically like, yeah, being like the new kid in high school, you just don't know what to expect. And everybody's like different and every tour is different. Some people are super super welcoming and want to help you with your own like world. And some people are more like, I'm going to focus on my world so you can focus on your world. So it's a very big mixed bag of that.
That's got to be interesting to jump into as well. I was listening to the Sound Girls podcast you were on, and you were talking about like touring with Tegan and Sarah, where there was a guitar that like wasn't playing. You mentioned in that story, like, hey, I'd kind of been there before, so I knew what to do, swap some things out, and we roll. But I imagine that's got to be really difficult in, say, a scenario where you are the new kid on the block, per se, and you step in, you're new. Is there a lot of prep that you try to do or seek from other folks in those situations? Like, hey, if XYZ happens, what's the plan? Or is it just kind of, hey, I'm going to step in here and let it rip?
Well, I think the first couple shows specifically with Vance were just like, okay, I'm just gonna like follow the instructions that I was taught, and like and the shows were smooth sailing and everything. But then it was just getting to sort of familiarize myself with certain things that like I needed to be aware of consistently. Like for acoustic guitars, which I have had I've worked on them before, but I just hadn't had like so many to work on.
Right.
So not only do you have to, you know, make sure the volume's up on them, change the battery inside them, and then also you have to make sure that the output jack is tightened up, because that for some reason, because the guitar straps like on the jack, it sometimes tends to wiggle loose. So that's always something I have to be aware of, to tighten. Cause if the jack is loose, then when you put the jack inside of the input, it may not connect, and then you just don't get sound at all. So that's one thing I learned I had to be aware of. And like, then eventually, and that was just general maintenance that I had to do for myself. As far as like teamwork efforts, we were having trouble with one with a ukulele channel at one point on the tour, and it was probably just because the input was dusty, or there was some kind of dust, or it was old. There wasn't maintenance done on the equipment before the leg started. So it was coming low. The sound of it was coming low through the monitor in front of house stations. So what me and the production manager decided to do was have a backup DI in place, just in case we needed to pull it out of the rig I had side stage and run it through a different cleaner channel. So that was sort of a fail safe we did. And for me, I was still learning a lot. So I was trying to create the bandwidth I needed to get all the information down and in. So I would have to ask the production manager a couple times, like, hey, so remind me, like, if this happens, like, what do I do? Because I had like one other counterpoint on stage who was the backline tech, but he was only handling keys and drums. So he really wasn't involved in Guitar World at all. So it was just very much on me to kind of like know what I needed to do. So I would have to ask the production manager to remind me certain things, or I'm sure at points he might have been annoyed, but I was just like, I just can't, I need to know, like, I'm not like that well versed in like signal flows. So you just have to tell me. So, but yeah, just a lot of like, I don't know, trying to basically communicate and do the job right, and have fail safes, like you mentioned, so that like you wouldn't run into these issues during the show. Things would just like shit the bed.
I'm curious about the inverse of this, but I don't want to get in trouble. So I guess I'll start on, are there guitars that are optimal for you? I like where you're like, this is my favorite kind of guitar.
All guitars have their personalities.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
Some of them, it's just like, it just ends up being a mystery as to why, like, they just decide not to work, or they do. We had a break between our 2-month run with Vance, actually. And then they did a one-off. It was just a trio show. It was just, they brought, you know, minimal equipment. They brought this Maton acoustic guitar, and they brought a Martin acoustic guitar with them. And I don't know what possibly could have happened, but the Martin, when it was plugged in the jack, for some reason, no sound was coming out of it. The manager texted me and she said, listen, we have backups, so everything's fine. Don't worry about it. But I just want to let you know, for some reason, the Martin is not working. And I was like, what? And you know, that kind of drives my anxiety wild, because I'm not there. I can't fix it. You know, I feel extremely bad that something's gone wrong for the artist and there's nothing I can do physically to like be there to help him, or even over the phone to help him. So, you know, he is the backup, and luckily Vance is like one of the most sweetest, kindest, easygoing artists I've ever had the pleasure of working with. And that's 100% true. Not even any way to butter up that organization. It's completely fact. So he was fine with it, but you know, it's still like you want your artist to use their instrument, because it's, you know, what they're used to. But yeah, so that all happened, and then I had to talk to the old guitar tech, and her and I kind of brainstormed what it could have possibly have been. And we were like, is the battery? And I was like, no, I changed the battery before that show. So like, it was a strong battery, so there's no way it was that. And it's like the volume was a little down, but still that wouldn't have been an issue. The sound would have gone through, because they fixed that. So yeah, we just still don't know what would have happened. And we think maybe it might've been just the jack pulling in and out, or being untwisted or something. When I finally got there, I had to like basically do a deep dive cavity search into this guitar, you know, pull all the strings off and then pull out the whole jack input, and basically, which requires like unscrewing on the side and taking like the sort of preamp out, and then also like pulling out the jack from like down at the bottom of the guitar, and then also like taking off the bridge, and then pulling the little pickup underneath that off, and then basically replacing the whole thing. And I still couldn't figure out why the old one wasn't working. It looked like it had like some bent bits inside of it, but I don't know. It was just stressful. And that was like new and unexpected. And that was annoying for a guitar that was like mostly his most reliable guitar. So that, I guess that was the most challenging thing of all with him for the guitars. But I don't know. I know your question was the easiest guitar.
I know, but that was beautiful. I love hearing kind of the intricacies of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say though, that on that tour, probably my favorite guitar is, there's this guy named, Will Morrissey, and he plays the saxophone and the, a Greco, electric guitar, and his electric guitar, I really like a lot, because it's always in tune. It's like,
it nice
plays or always flying. And then every time I take it out and I just like tune it to make sure it's good for him, I was like, this is always in tune, or it's very easy to put in tune as well. So
yeah, I imagine that's got to be a nightmare. I heard that story you talked about where the about the guitar that went out of tune when you were new on a production, and the artist just would like handed a guitar, was like, tune, and like, but then was demanding it back. I was like,
daddy. And that was a nightmare too. That felt like a whole, like, that was like, I must be dreaming, please somebody wake me up right now, like I cannot believe
right
happening. But yeah, the crazy thing about that guitar was that it's so temperamental to weather, and it goes out of tune so easily, because it's a hollow body electric guitar. I mean, maybe that isn't even a reason why, but it is a hollow body electric guitar. But yeah, so I put it in tune, gave it to him, the temperature dropped, it went out of tune. He just gave it to me and was like, tune. And I,
yeah.
I what? Like, I was so guitar teching at that point. I mean, he wanted me to give him the backup guitar, but he never uses that guitar. And I was told that by the last tech. So that was a whole, man, he was so mad at me.
Yeah. Well, also in your defense, if someone hands you a guitar and says tune, you're thinking, okay, I'm being handed an out-of-tune guitar and being told tune, so I'm going to tune the out-of-tune guitar. But
when I was looking at him while I was tuning it, he was like super mad, and he's like, you're the guitar. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll give it back to you. But it still was that.
Oh gosh. Well, you're a saint for going through that, because I think I would have gotten feisty. I'd have been like, yeah, I'm not done. But I get to like, hey, the show's rolling. But that's the problem. I have two Gibsons. I love the sound of my Gibsons. I have Les Pauls, but they will not stay in tune no matter how much I beg and plead with them. It's just so funny how many things there are to think about. And I'm assuming there's just new quirks that pop up all the time on the road.
Yeah. One fear of mine that actually, it was, you know, with acoustics, you have to also worry about lots of interference, especially from subs and everything. Like, this is another thing that happened on the Tegan and Sarah one-off I did, is that I was standing basically behind a lot of like PA and subs. So I'd get, you know, this feedback that would interfere with me tuning. So then sometimes my tuner would just like always be on D, like no matter what. I would be tuning in E, it would be on D. And I'm just was so frustrated. And at that point, usually what I did was I just grab the tuner and the guitar, and then I had to go into a different room and basically like tune it in there, because I just need to get it tuned before the, you know, before it's needed for the next song. But that happened a little bit on Vance towards the end of our run. But we have this neat thing that a lot of people, I think a lot of people actually use now, where it's sort of like this two-way channel thing. So like I can be on the main channel and hear everything I need to hear for the show. Like Vance's guitars, his ukuleles, some drums, keys, the bass guitar, the other electric guitar, just to make sure that they're all in working order during the show and there's no hiccups that happen. But there's a separate channel where it's my tuning channel, and I can just clearly hear just me tuning a guitar. So even if the reader is off, I can still hear the notes and tune it properly, so there's no hiccups. But yeah, that happened a little bit towards the end of the run where it was my tuner's just being finicky.
That's so fascinating here. And there's just so much going on at once. So I guess when you're doing that, how often are you having to bounce between those channels? I guess it probably depends on the amount of switches you're doing, but yeah. How do you manage to maintain?
When I was trying to get more comfortable with, tuning, but also I have to, you know, pay attention to Vance on stage, because there was moments where I would miss certain things on stage because I was so focused with tuning that was something I had to sort of juggle and make sure like I was paying, you know, just as much attention to Vance on stage currently as I was when I was trying to tune his guitar for the next song. So I would try and just keep my ears on his channel. And then I would just try and look to make sure that like all the notes were correct on the tuner. And then once I knew that they were correct, then I would switch over to the tuner channel and just like listen to them for like a final, like, okay, these are all right, you know, and then switch back. So that way my ears were, even if my eyes could be on Vance, my ears could be on him more so than like if I just was on the tuner channel, like working on one string for like 2 minutes, you know? So that was kind of my trick to just make sure I was there and available for both items and attentive to both.
I think what's cool about the behind the scenes view. So thank you for taking the time to like break that down. It's just, I think so many people don't realize how much is going on just to make like a single instrument work. Like when I think folks see a guitar switch happen and they go, oh, cool, they're switching guitars. And there's really so much that is going on at the same time, really at all parts of a show, just so that the audience gets a seamless experience.
Yeah. It's also kind of, interesting that I've noticed that the most common feedback I've gotten from friends who've seen the shows live is they always think that Vance has like so many guitars. They're like, oh my gosh, he has like so many different guitars. And it's more like he has four guitars. Two of them are mains and two of them are backups. And we just kind of dance between about two to three of them and with capo changes. So it always seems like it's a different guitar. I mean, he just has different. So that's why he's always getting a different guitar every song. But it's more just about like the tuning than how many guitars he has.
Right. Thank you so much for taking the time today. And one thing I always love to kind of do is take a half step back, or really a large step back, and just look at kind of the music ecosystem as a whole. So I guess my question to you before we kind of start wrapping here is like, ultimately, why do you work in music? Like, what is it that has drawn you and kept you in the space?
That's a good question. I think it's just the constant challenge of always like learning something new, meeting new people, having the ability to always, I guess, up my level of, experience. Just, I love connecting with new people. I love meeting some of the same people that I've already toured with on the road again. I love also working with the same artists if I can, and having that sort of like we're back together again, like that family environment, or like, I don't know, like a Guardians of the Galaxy type thing where you're just like a bunch of like random misfits and you're all together like on a mission. And you know, you just keep on coming back together and eventually you guys learn everybody's quips and like how to act around each other. And I think I like that.
That's awesome. Conversely then, I guess, what do you hope that the people you work with in music get out of working with you, whether it be the audience, the artist, the crew?
I just hope they know that, you know, I'm always trying to do my best, and I'm not only care about myself on the road, but I do care a lot about the people I work with. And I really do get a lot of satisfaction out of making people happy on the road. And it's even just like basic check-ins, like, oh, how was your show? Or like, you know, just like getting people little treats or like sodas or, you know, just something to make people happy, or hanging out with people on days off. Like that's, I just hope that people would think that, you know, I'm just trying to always, I don't know, be a good personality to have on tour and a good person who like respects those that I work with, you know.
That's so lovely. That's actually like the first time someone's like kind of articulated that perspective, which is really cool. If you were to rewind all the way back to that first time, I know that you know, you've moved to LA. What would you tell yourself that you're, if you were sitting here now and you got to rewind and talk to yourself that's just moved to LA, what would you say?
Oh man. I mean, I think I just give myself lots of sage advice. Maybe just keep on doing you, and also just don't let people put you in a box and define who you are. Make sure that you're always in control of like who you are, because you're the one who makes those decisions about where your life is going and what you want to do. And if people are giving you a hard time, just try not to listen to them, because they just don't matter in the end. That's what I'd say.
I love it. And you've lived that, which is so cool. You've talked about growing out of the roles and just moving on up. And it's so cool to see. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This is so fun. I can't wait for people to be able to hear this.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Cheers. Shouts out to Mary for being on Made for Music. Be sure to follow her on Instagram at Mary Broadbent, spelled just as it sounds. Or you can take a look at this episode title and type it out as one word. If you dig what you hear on the podcast, brought to you by Stitch Records, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort, and I'll see you next time.